We had a 7 o'clock exec session meeting. We are finished with that now. We're going to go into our first public meeting, and Dr. Graham will explain to you what it is. It's a brief explanation of the smart schools. Then we're going to go right into a regular board meeting right after that. So at this time, I'll turn it over to Dr. Graham.
So as Mr. Falco said, this evening is our smart schools investment plan hearing. So this is a part of the process that we've been going through with the Smart Schools Investment Plan allocations for the Sachem School District. You may recall that in 2014, the state had passed a bond, and this was the state, this is not Sachem. It was a statewide bond referendum that authorized roughly $2 billion of expenditures for technology and technology-related purchases. And Sachem's allocation of that bond is $11 million. And that's a reimbursable program. So it's not something that the taxpayers of the Sachem School District are now going to go out and vote on or that we have to borrow the money for. It is our approved $11 million. We will be hopefully submitting a plan to the state. Once we are approved, we go out and begin the process of doing the work, and then we are reimbursed from the state for that work. So this is our hearing. So what Mr. Renda and I will do very quickly is give you an overview. We've already presented this. The presentation is on our website, and we will present this briefly, and then there will be an opportunity for the Board of Education to ask any additional questions, and then for the public to ask any questions. So that's the overview there that I had given you, and basically the money was allocated to advance the use of technology in public and non-public schools, increase internet access, and wireless connectivity, as well as installing high-tech security in schools. And Sachem's allocation, as I mentioned before, was a little bit over $11 million. There is a process that has to be adhered to move along with the Smart Schools Investment Plan. We've done all of those checked points already. So you see that we have done our presentation, and now we're at the public hearing. And again, provided that we move forward with the public hearing, the Board of Education will adopt a resolution approving that plan. We will submit to the State Education Department. Hopefully, we'll get approval very quickly from them, and we will begin with the work. Jack's just going to take you through what our Smart Schools Investment Plan includes.
So we began our design implementation working with our architects to design vestibules for each one of our schools. In addition to that, we have visitor management systems, which will be included in each of those locations, as well as the video surveillance systems that will be included in those spaces. We work to increase our video surveillance district-wide by approximately 388 cameras, as well as the fact that we'll be replacing over 520 of the cameras that are at Sachem High School East and Sachem High School North. We are looking to upgrade all of our network switches, our core infrastructure, as well as the wiring and the power distribution systems to make way for ubiquitous wireless access throughout our district. We're designing it to be able to provide coverage throughout the district as well as the bandwidth needed when multiple people want to get on and we're dealing with large numbers of students, especially in some of our common areas. We've been able to also put a large implementation in for classroom connectivity. So we're looking at wireless laptop carts, which will be used throughout the district, as well as a variety of teacher presentation devices, such as interactive whiteboards and document cameras. The way that Smart Schools breaks down, the purchases that we're looking to do are in these three main categories: connectivity, which is considering all of our wiring, all of our core infrastructure, our wireless implementation, our learning technology, which is our interactive whiteboards, the wireless carts, document cameras and other classroom devices, and over $2 million for high-tech security, which includes all of the vestibule builds and all of the work that we're doing for our video surveillance systems.
So our timeline, as we've been talking about, is we've had the presentation now. It's been posted on our website for over 30 days. This evening is our hearing. And we are hopefully optimistic that we will be submitting our Smart Schools Investment Plan upon successful passage of a resolution this evening. We will submit to the State Education Department, and at that point, that's when we wait for the State Education Department to give us the thumbs up, and then we begin with the work. So at this time, if there are any questions from the Board of Education,
Any questions up here? Dick.
Mr. Render, based on the timeline, if approved, how long would it take to get all the vestibules installed in all of our buildings?
That would really be a question that we could ask of our architect. I wouldn't know what the exact timelines are, and that also needs to be coordinated with our facilities department. So there would be some discussion there.
I think, in short, the second that we would receive approval is when we would start moving forward with the work.
And for the entire project, what is your – do you have like a timeline? If approved, is it going to take 5 years to complete everything, 6 years, or is this going to be condensed into a shorter time frame?
Sure. Working with some of our vendors, we've had some estimates on wiring and cabling could take up to 6 months because we're rewiring all of our buildings. But if there's the funding available, we may have the ability to leapfrog certain parts of the project. So as wiring is completed in certain areas – if the funding is available, we would be able to start the core infrastructure, followed by the wireless, and then hopefully have all of those things moving together in progression should the funding be available. If that were possible, a 2 to 3 year implementation seems reasonable. But again, some of that will come down to our funding capabilities and then obviously working with our vendors.
And with regards to that timeline, do you feel that some of this equipment, it's not going to be outdated in 2 to 3 years? Is it going to...
Sure.
What's your gauge on that?
Sure. What we've used to present is the current technology. As we move forward and we get closer to the actual time of purchase, as technology changes, Smart Schools gives us the ability to purchase whatever is current to the time. So we're not locked into the devices themselves right now. For instance, under the classroom technology, we have wireless laptop carts. If we were dealing with the technology right now, we could say this is the cost and this is the device. However, we know when the time comes, we'll be probably dealing with better devices, hopefully at a lesser cost. And then we can maximize to buy more of those devices to put more things in the hands of children.
Any other questions? Rob?
Yeah, Jack, just a quick question. $11 million bond, you know, last time we did a big bond where we got money from the state was the Excel bond. And when we put forth some of those projects, we estimated that we were going to spend the $4.5 million from the state doing this number of projects. And in the end, we realized that the projects may have come in cheaper than we anticipated, and we had additional monies left over within that bond. Do we have a phase two or phase three of ideas put together so that if we underspend the $11 million, what's proposed, we'll be able to implement additional technology?
So, in short, what Jack and I have spoken about is if there are any of the projects that come in under and we have additional monies, we would be using that to purchase additional devices for all of our buildings. What that device is, that may depend upon where we are with technology. That could change, as Jack had mentioned, from today until 2 years from now. But any additional monies are going to be used for additional devices.
Just one other question. The visitor management system, a couple of years back, we piloted a system, you probably remember, probably 7 or 8 years back, mm-hmm. and it was very slow and very cumbersome, and it kind of slowed a lot of things down. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a great idea because we want to know who is in our buildings at all times. Mm-hmm. Have they improved that technology to speed it up and be able to, you know, to get a good idea as to, you know, any alerts that might, you know, we should be aware of?
Absolutely. You know, there were a lot of challenges when we did that pilot implementation. And so we are working with very tried and true systems. Those are the ones that we've reached out to, what we've gotten general pricing on. And a lot of these systems are meant to move very, very quickly. The system, for instance, has a part for the high school, which we're looking to implement as well, for card readers. And literally as fast as you can put the cards in front of them, for the student portion, it flies. The longest part of it would really be just scanning the license through, which will have remote scanners within the vestibules for people to scan their license. And it is quick.
Vic, go ahead.
Mr. O'Keefe, this actually pertains to you as well. So we're going to be laying out the $11 million getting reimbursed from the state. I know a lot of folks that might be in here might not have been in this room since last year when the district was faced with tons of cuts and we only had $16,000 in reserves. Can you explain how we're going to fund that today if approved, and then obviously we'll get reimbursed from the state?
Sure. Obviously, a lot depends on the timeline in which State Facilities approves the work that's going to be done and how we coordinate it with our architects. I assume it's going to be done in phases. So, you know, let's even breaking it up in quarters at $2.5, $3 million each. Certainly, during certain times of the year, the district has its own funds. We have $13 million in fund balance. So if it's a point in the year where we've received our taxes at that point and we have significant cash flow of our own, we'll probably lay the money out ourselves. If it's at a point in the year, let's say we were starting the projects in July or August of next year where cash flow is low, we might actually have to go out and do short-term borrowing through a ban, just like we do a TAN at the beginning of the year for cash flow. It would be a very similar thing. You would take out a one-year loan that would be payable at the end of the year.
And is that interest on that ban?
That would become part of the debt.
It's going to become part of the debt.
Right.
And is that reimbursed by the state as well?
Yeah, but you'd want, obviously, not to incur any interest. So optimally, we would want to be laying out our own money wherever possible.
Okay.
Any other questions? Dorothy?
Dr. Graham, part of the SMART, even though it's called the SMART Schools Bond, it actually has to do with security as well, right? Part of the money is for security, which Jack had just told us about. So in planning all this and in kind of hearing a summary as far as the financial plan, is there a priority as far as where you want to start, or do you want to do it in conjunction with the security, also with the technology together? Or are you looking at doing maybe the security first?
Well, I think we'd have to look at the approval process. Ideally, we'd be doing many of these things in parallel to each other so that we could be cabling a building and installing the vestibules at the same time. That would be the ideal. And obviously, the security and the wireless, I think, have to come before we go out and purchase devices. So those would be the two main priority areas.
So I would guess that as you're going through this process and you get the approval and then you work with Mr. O'Keefe as far as the funding, are you looking at any certain times that it would be easier to do the installations, maybe during the summer when no one's in the buildings, or is that going to be an issue?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the work is really difficult, heavy lifting work, cabling entire buildings or adding essentially what amounts to a double storefront onto a building. All of those things, they may need to occur over breaks, over summers, but we're going to be looking to do as much of this work as we can keep up with our approval process.
Okay, and I, in the past, like Rob had said, when we had gone out with the bond, we did some of the work in-house. Are we going to be able to do any of the work in-house, or is it a lot of it just going with expertise?
Well, our meetings thus far, when it comes to the security vestibules, we've involved our facilities and maintenance staff in on those conversations, along with our architects and Mr. Renda's office. So I think that those are opportunities that we would definitely be looking to do.
Okay. And then
in addition to the cabling pieces as well, wherever possible.
And then as far as getting the prices on all this, because obviously you're sending in a plan, we have to at least have a general idea what the cost is going to be as far as labor, materials. We haven't sent anything out as far as through our purchasing department yet, right?
No, nothing to that level. Requirements from Smart Schools does say that we have to use OGS and some of the different pieces that are there. BOCES is available as well, but obviously there's an admin fee that we would need to consider for that. But in doing any of the work we've done now, we've worked with vendors to get pricing, to get ideas, so we can provide and submit a proposal. We've done a lot of internal work to identify the things that need to be done in very granular detail to make sure that we know what to ask. But when it comes time, we'll actually have to go out and get full bills of material, make sure they're OGS approved, or send out mini bids as needed, and then go ahead and get these things done.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. I just got... That's good. Yeah, Ken, I got one.
Sorry, I was sitting in the corner back here, so I couldn't be seen. Sorry about that. How rigid is the plan that we are proposing? Because I have a question specifically about security, but I don't want to address it in open session. So I'd like to perhaps address it later. But in terms of the rigidity of the plan, once it is approved, is there adequate wiggle room in there to make adjustments and modifications to things, or are we pretty firmly locked into the plan that we submit?
The general description that you submit must have some detailed information. So I kind of was a little vague there. So generally, you're putting in information, but they want some level of detail that will define what the projects actually are. Now, if we say we're putting in 388 cameras and the pricing comes way down and we decide to do 4.25, we're fully within our ability to do that. However, if we wanted to turn that around and say now we want some other sort of, we want RFID readers in the doors with tags that go on every device or every person or every student ID card or something like that, that changes the scope somewhat. And so if we did want to change it to that level, we would need to go back to state and resubmit an amendment, and there is a procedure for us to do that. But that would be for something major. If it's something that's, you know, a fluctuation within the plan of what we're doing, that's not a problem.
Okay. I just have one question, Dr. I think we may have asked it a couple of weeks back, but we presently have three towers in the district that we use presently for either the Wi-Fi or wherever. Are they going to be obsolete after this system is in, or are we going to use that still?
Sure. There's still quite a few of them. There's a lot more than three that we still maintain.
Okay.
The systems on there do still work. Some of them had been replaced to be much higher bandwidth. They are used as a tertiary system if our fiber connections ever go down, and we have had that with some terrible storms where some telephone poles have burned up and it's melted the fiber. We've been able to just make sure that that building has power, powers up the dishes on the poles, and now that building has phones, it has basic internet, has things like that. So we're not looking to remove that. It's all still licensed correctly with the FCC. We maintain those systems. There's very minimal work that we need to do or maintenance on them, and it's just maintained as a tertiary.
Good.
At this time.
Thank you. Okay. Dr. Graham, do you need the...
Are you taking a resolution at this point, Dr. Graham?
No, that's in the regular meeting.
In the regular meeting. Yeah. Okay. You've got that. And then this would, we would close the public meeting, close the hearing, and then make a different motion to go into the public hearing. Yep.
Okay. This time I need a motion to close this meeting. Mike, second. Dorothy, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried. Okay.
Now a motion to open into executive session, into a public session for the main meeting.
Okay, I need a motion to go, that's the wrong one. A motion to go into public session for a regular meeting of the Board of Education. Motion, Laura, second. Bill, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Before I go forward, I failed to mention, and at this point, I want to read something regarding, okay, this week was extremely saddened to learn that one of the victims in the tragedy that recently occurred in Central Islip was a former Sachem Student East student. Michael Yadar Lopez, who was, we extend our deepest condolences not only to Michael's family and friends during this difficult time, but to all of those affected by this horrible event. I just want to mention that he was a student at Sachem East. Okay. This is for later. This is for later. Okay. Regular. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Graham.
Okay. So the next part of our meeting is the report of the superintendent. And generally, I've been giving some updates about the district and some of our goings-on. And for this evening, the report of the superintendent will include our final budget presentation. And the final budget presentation is a culmination of five or six budget meetings that we've had thus far, in which we've given the community and the Board of Education an overview of what's included in our budget, of what our tax levy and what we anticipate it to be, what our budget-to-budget expenses are. And at this point, we're ready to present the final version. So I will just let you know that we have developed throughout the course of, let's say, 4 or 5 months at this point, a budget that we believe maintains all of our current instructional programs and offerings. It includes all of our current club and extracurricular and co-curricular activities, all of our professional development work for our teachers. And we also believe that this budget, as proposed, includes some critical enhancements, including some reallocation of teaching staff to help support perhaps some additional secondary teaching sections that will help us address some class size issues. Additionally, we have allocated some resources towards E&L teachers, which we know is a need in our community as our E&L population grows. Similarly, with special education and some reallocation there as well. So not only do we support and move forward with a budget that we believe maintains all of our current and existing programs, but we also believe that it provides enhancements in those critical areas. And I invite you, if you haven't been to budget presentations or you haven't checked out our website yet, our new website is there. All of the budget presentations are there dating back to January 28th.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Graham. And yes, I would reiterate that because this evening's meeting is just an overview of where the final budget's going to come in. So any of the detail that you'd want to know from prior presentations is on the website. So when we left last time, unfortunately, the state had still not adopted their budget. So the state aid component of our revenue stream was still unknown. So last weekend, the state came to consensus. They did adopt the budget. On April 10th, they made an announcement, and they released the state aid runs. So these are all the different categories that aid comes to SACHM. And you'll see at the bottom on the right-hand side, we have a net increase of just about $600,000. We picked up $1.3 million in what they call foundation aid, which is your basic aid. There was some other minor adjustments, but then the material adjustment was to our building aid. There was a reduction in building aid of almost $700,000. But still all said, we picked up another $598,000. You may remember from some of the earlier conversations, the initial projection from the governor was about $900,000. So in rough numbers, it's about $1.5 million in additional funds. But now that there's a material change in building aid, the way that the tax cap formula works, it requires us to now go back and recalculate what that formula is going to be and what the percentage increase is going to be. Building aid is one of those components in what's known as the capital exclusion. Basically, you take all of the district's debt on its outstanding bonds, any new capital work, facilities work, things of that nature, add those numbers together, and you deduct from that whatever building aid is coming in from the state. Obviously, if you've got debt to pay, the state's paying part of it, they're not going to let you double dip and have aid on it. So when the building aid drops, the tax levy actually increases. So the tax levy now has crept up a little bit. It was at 3.07. It's now at 3.47%, but that is still within the tax cap, and it still only requires a simple majority vote. And since this is an important fact, I just wanted to stop. Did anyone on the board have any questions about that? Still within the tax cap. I know it's confusing because they keep announcing it as a 2% tax cap, but it's just a formula. There's only one component of it that could be as much as 2%, and that's where the CPI comes in. The CPI for the fourth year in a row has actually been below 2%. The reason ours has changed is the district did enter into a new energy performance contract last year, so that debt is now on the district's books, as well as we've added about $1.5 million in additional facilities work to the budget. So that has caused the increase beyond that figure. Yes.
John, just for the benefit of clarity to the community that is here tonight, when they reduced the building aid in the way that they did, in effect what they've done, if I'm correct, is they've passed the burden of taxation directly back to the community as opposed to the state where it's spread out amongst the entire state.
Correct. It's just another one of the flaws within the tax cap formula.
Right.
It wasn't clearly thought out. Obviously, they didn't look at all the different components and how it affects, the end result.
Right. So they've pushed it back onto the community once again, so the community understands
correct.
That.
Yeah. They range from as high as, I think, 5.5, 6 we've seen, to down as low as, in the decimals. You know, it really depends on, a lot of it's driven by the district's debt. So, like, if you had bond debt and that debt expires, you could have a tax cap that drops off dramatically. So it really depends on what's in flux in the district. If everything stayed the same, your bond debt stayed the same. It's like if this year, if we didn't add any new debt, if we weren't doing any additional capital projects and everything stayed as it was, if you remember in the earlier conversation, our tax cap increase would only be 1.5%. Part of it's driven because that $1.1 million of new EPC debt is coming on to the district's books next year, as well as the $1.5 million in capital projects.
And that $1.5 million in capital projects, you may recall, there are two components of that that are requirements by the Office of Civil Rights that we have to have done to be compliant with the Office of Civil Rights. The other piece of that is that we have an aging school bus fleet that we are proposing to begin a recycling of new buses into that, a cycling of new buses into that. And so that 1.5 includes six new school buses, and we anticipate moving forward that we will continue to cycle new buses into our fleet.
And the way the formula works, so in this year we're adding $750,000 for school buses. If we had the same $750,000 in next year's budget, it doesn't change the tax cap at all. So whatever the basic calculation comes in at, that would be the number. It's only when there's a flux that you get a change. So just some quick math, we've got about $1.3 million. We picked up another $598,000, excuse me, in state aid and $692,000 because of the tax levy. So, you know, what should we do with that additional monies? So district's administration's recommendation is, if you may recall in the last presentation, one of the ways we were balancing the budget was appropriating $500,000 from our employee benefit reserve to pay the projected debt next year. So my recommendation would be to no longer appropriate that $500,000, use the additional monies that we're going to realize, and keep that money in the reserve, because as we know, we're trying to build fund balance and district reserve. We're about $17 million short of what the recommendation of the state controller would be at this point. But even with that said, putting that $500,000 back, it still leaves $790,000 to put into the 17-18 budget, which does sound like a material number, but it is only 0.26% of our next year's budget. So this being said, if we went with this amount, as proposed, our next year's budget would be $314,191,000, which is a 2.54% increase. And the recommendation, how to use that, utilize that money, and right now my recommendation would be to hold it in contingency. We're still working out some final staffing. Obviously, over the summer, there's sometimes staffing changes that are needed depending upon enrollments, special ed needs, things of that nature. And the other part that is concerning is when the governor passed the budget, he let out the following statement, basically stating if the federal government cuts $850 million or more, municipalities and school districts can expect mid-year cuts. So again, $790,000 is a sizable amount of money. It's not a significant amount of money in the $314 million budget. And the good part is, obviously, we don't need to utilize it at all. It becomes another component that we can put back into fund balance and start rebuilding our reserves. Any questions here? No? So I just wanted to update you on the property tax potential increase for next year. Again, these are built off of quote-unquote average homes. These are the numbers we get by the town assessors. These aren't numbers that Sachem calculates, so I have to go by what their numbers are. But in an average home in Brookhaven, which is the first line, you'll see a monthly increase has gone up slightly. It'll be about $15.84. Islip would be $16.67, and Smithtown is about $18. These numbers actually don't get finalized till the fall, which is when the tax rolls come out and when the equalization rates come out, because since we are in three different towns, the state tells us what the breakdowns are going to be between those towns. But right now, based on the numbers we have, the distribution between the different communities is in the far right. So 65% of the levy is borne by Brookhaven, 31% approximately is Islip, and just shy of 4% is Smithtown. Any questions? No. Yes.
The line-by-line budget that we had discussed, will that be available for the public online?
Absolutely. As soon as the board adopts it, I want to release the full line-by-line that we're going to examine it. But just as a reminder to the community, since we change the way some of the things are allocated within the budget, there will be some disparities that people will see line to line, because in the past we used to also put in the grant-funded positions and things of that nature, and then we'd subtract them out the bottom. So as people are looking at the line-by-line detail, you may see an anomaly where you'll see a few $100,000 change, and I wouldn't want anyone to think that there's been any cuts in staffing or things of that nature. That's not the case.
You remember the social worker, there was a social worker piece where it looked like on the line-by-line that there was a cut of approximately $400,000 to social workers, and that was not because we're reducing positions. That was because Mr. O'Keefe was putting those expenditures within the grant-funded portion of the budget.
And then that, sorry.
We want to make sure that all of the general fund expenditures are clearly delineated within the general fund budget.
And so then for any questions that the community may have, if they cannot make a budget presentation, they can just email in or...
They can email myself, Dr. Graham, or Mr. Sachs. We're all available to
help. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
In the district clerk's office, there'll also be copies of the budget proposal. So if anybody wants to reach out to the district clerk, they can get those copies from the district clerk as well.
We can email it digitally, whatever they want. And basically, that wraps up my portion of the presentation. Just a reminder to the community to please vote Tuesday, May 16th. It's still at all the elementary schools, including Gate Lot and Tecumseh, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Any further questions?
Any questions here on the board? No? Okay. Yeah. Ready?
Hang on one second.
Just a reminder to the board. I happened to listen to the... couple of the tapes, and if the board members, I noticed if you're not speaking into the mic, they can't hear us. So if you want to make your voice known, you have to speak into the mics.
Okay.
All right? Just the community can hear you, but the tape doesn't pick up. All right? Okay. Approval of the minutes. A motion, please. It's Laura, second. Mike. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. I thought it was you, Mike.
Okay, now the moment that many of you have been waiting for, and we apologize for the delay. We're going to do our Escamilla All-County presentation. So I'd invite Ms. Aiz and Mr. Comito to come up and present the certificates. I'm sorry, and other music staff as well, our music teachers, sorry. And I think we're going to take a picture now. If I could just ask the students, if you could join me in a round of applause thanking your teachers and your families at this point. And I recommend that everybody get out to our spring concerts to see the students perform this year.
Okay, business items. Business items 5A1. Motion, please. Terry, second. Rob, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Personnel items, consent agenda 6A1 through 6C4. Motion. Mike, second. Laura, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. C4, correct. Okay, action items. Adoption of the 17-18 school budget. Motion, please. Laura, second. Rob, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. 712, adoption of smart school investment plan. Motion. Laura, second. Terry, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Mini contracts. Consent agenda 721 through 727. Motion, please. Bill, second. Terry, any questions? Bill?
One question.
Go ahead.
All right. Just the agreement with St. Joseph's for the meals. I don't remember seeing anything like that in the past. I was just wondering if it could be explained. That's a revenue stream for us?
Well, it's something that we learned of as we've gone through the process this year. You've actually been providing meals to St. Joseph's since 2014-15. It was started, I guess, as some arrangement to assist the school within the district. We don't send them too many meals per day. I mean, our average counts, the count in 14-15, they only started in February. We did about 3,300 meals. 15-16 was the first full year. We did 6,700 meals. And this year it's actually dropped off a little because now a parent group does Friday pizza day, I believe, from what I'm told. So we've only done 3,100 meals year to date. It's a nominal revenue stream. It's about $10,000 last year the district made on it. It's about $1.45 a meal profit. So it was done to help out the school. I don't know the history behind it. It's just something that me and the new food service director learned of as we were making our way through the
So it's just
year.
A private agreement between us and St. Joseph's?
Right, it's just never been solidified before. It was a handshake, and they used to send us monthly checks.
All right. Good to know.
Okay, any other questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, we're up to 731, I guess. Recommendations on a committee for special ed. Motion, please. Laura, second. Terry, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Monthly reports. Subcommittees. Nothing? Okay. Okay, we have visitors. John, is it Contes? Right up there, John. Let's get behind that mic and make sure that green light is lit. We could hear you. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Districts that are representing the state of Christian schools continue to be busing, they will continue to be busing after the 17-18 school year. And I wrote this letter, I'm just kind of highlighting it right now, I don't want to read the whole thing. And my response was kind of brief, and that's why I turned it to me. This letter is to
All right, what I'd like to do is you've mentioned the attorneys. We'd like to talk it over with our attorneys, get their opinion, and then certainly get back to you with a final answer. Is that all right, Dr. Graham? Okay, we'll certainly get back to you. We just need some more information. You mentioned the attorneys. We want the opinion of our attorneys first, okay? Okay, we'll find that out and let you know, okay? Well, as soon as possible. I'll let them know tomorrow. I request it tomorrow, and Dr. Graham's office will get back to you as soon as possible. Okay? Thank you, sir. All right. Dana Platon? You can't get any tanner. That's it. I know.
Dana, that'll be Mr. O'Keefe and myself doing those presentations. So,
thank you, Dana.
Dana, could you just leave those dates with the clerk so she can provide them to the board?
Will they be posted on the site? They are on the site, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir. Absolutely. No.
Good evening.
That's it.
I just went this past week to two very important meetings. One was held at South Country School District. I went there. They had a leadership group, and I thought I'd attend it to see what was going on in the political world relating to a serious circumstance that we're having, which is the crime wave, and it's a crime wave that's happening, not just in Central Islip, but if you look at the history, we've been a little above it because, thank God, our community has been able to not be beset with that. But it's there. And one of the things that happened was I happened to be on the station with two police officers with the Jay Oliver Show. And at that time, they reported the nature and the extent of this gangdom, so to speak. And I thought I'd share with you what happened at the meeting, because at one meeting, there were officers from the police department. And the other meeting, which was held at the Suffolk County Library, so where most people can't attend because it's during the day, they gave a film from the sheriff's office that showed the magnitude of this problem. And I couldn't help but connect what happened today in the newspapers where they reported that now the federal government is considering it not just a local issue, but one of international nature, because the source of what we have in here comes from another source. I don't have to mention names, but it's there. And what I wanted to suggest as a member of the Legislative Committee, since that's part of our role, is that we can ask our public to voice their opinions and write the letters to the Senate, to the Congressmen King and Zeldin, and also any other officials that they feel they know, to say, let's get the federal government involved in this process, because up to this day, the only people involved has been the FBI. So we need to be aware that this cancer is affecting the dynamics of our community called Suffolk. Because once you read about what's going on in the papers, you can't help but feel a sense of anxiety. And our children read the papers. Our children talk about it. And let's show them as adults that we are concerned too, and remove that sort of wave of, I hope somebody does something about it, and let it be us to do it, and write letters or phone calls to people to voice our opinion at least, and voice it so that they get a number. And I think that that would sort of show that Sachem is certainly sans egal about taking initiatives to do something I think is very worthwhile for our children. Because I think when our children see that taking place, the dynamics of the dialogue will continue to show that we make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Okay. Future agenda items? None. Okay. Any other questions, Board? No? Okay. At this point, I need a motion to go into executive session to discuss the employment of particular personnel, collective negotiations, a matter of discipline of a particular student, and a matter of transportation appeal relating to a particular student. Motion, please. Mike, second. Laura, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. Have a safe trip home.